This is a special episode of Washington Today. During this week's Democratic National Convention, our podcast is our post-convention coverage with analysis on the day's events.
Our campaign 2020 coverage continues. C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of politics.
And so the 48th Democratic National Convention now in the books. With Joe Biden as the presidential nominee, it was a virtual convention. The traditional balloon drop replaced with fireworks at the Chase Center in Wilmington, Delaware. Next week, the focus will shift to President Trump and the Republicans. Tonight, some of the key moments which shaped this final night of the convention, including the speech by former Vice President Biden, now the 2020 Democratic presidential nominee. In just a moment, we'll be joined again with former Republican Congressman Tom Davis of Virginia and Lavora Barnes, chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. But first, we want to turn once again to Emily Larson, who's been covering all of this for the Washington Examiner. She is in Arlington, Virginia tonight. And Emily, I'm curious, what's the first line in your story tonight on the convention and on Joe Biden's speech?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is Joe Biden nailed it. This was a very important speech for him, considering that he's been running for president essentially for 33 years since 1987, and it was very important for him, especially as the Trump campaign is trying to portray him as being someone who's in cognitive decline, somebody who a lot of people see his verbal stumbles and wonder if he's really up to the task as the oldest presidential nominee that we've had, that he really needed to step up and show that he really has what it takes, and I think he did that. It was very interesting in this coronavirus era, the lack of the live audience has maybe been a detriment to some speakers who would do better with some applause lines and a big crowd to cheer them on. But for the Biden campaign, this was very interesting because he had more of a tone of having more of an Oval Office type speech, speaking directly to the camera, not waiting for big applause lines, and really hammered home the urgency of the moment and contrasting with the more erratic style of President Trump. And that's something that the Biden campaign was very much going for, and it ended up turning out very well for him.
One of the common criticisms we've heard about this convention, a lot of rhetoric, a lot of anti-Trump language, but not a lot of substance. Did we get that tonight from Joe Biden?
Sure. You know, he did go into policy. I even saw some thoughts that this was sounded a little bit like a State of the Union speech, sort of rattling off policies. He talked about a national mask mandate, somehow make sure that everybody is wearing masks in public rather than leaving that up to the states. He talked about some other, especially coronavirus policies. But this was very much a convention about the emotional aspect of voting and whether you like President Trump or not, and whether you like Joe Biden or not. In 2016, Hillary Clinton had the disadvantage of not being liked by a lot of voters. Neither was Donald Trump, and that made that election more of a choice between who do you like better, who's the least bad option. Voters generally like Joe Biden a lot better than President Trump. And so this convention was very much about defining him even further in voters' minds as somebody who you would like to be around in contrast to the president.
Initially, as you know, this convention slated for mid-July in Milwaukee, now back-to-back conventions because of COVID-19. Next week in Charlotte, North Carolina, with the president here in Washington, D.C., as the Republicans gather. Move ahead to what we can expect next week, and do you suspect that the Republicans will tweak anything based on what they saw this week?
Sure, we don't have a lot of details about what the Republicans are planning for next week. We have a few speakers that have been announced. President Trump is slated to give his acceptance speech on Thursday, I believe, from the White House, which has caused some criticism about whether there are ethics issues there. But essentially, there's going to have to follow this convention that has already set expectations about what a presidential or Democratic National Convention looks like in the coronavirus era. And it will be interesting to see whether the Republicans, after first trying to still have an in-person convention in Charlotte and then in Jacksonville and then canceling Jacksonville and now putting this together without having a lot of details available, whether they will be able to have the same type of production values and have it run as smoothly as the Democrats did.
And the Republicans gathering Monday morning. We'll have live coverage on C-SPAN beginning at 9 o'clock Monday morning, and then the evening session, which will get underway at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Have you seen any numbers in terms of the ratings this week? Do you expect to see a bump for the Democrats out of this convention?
Sure. Well, the television viewership ratings are down compared to their convention in 2016. That could be a combination of a lot of things, not only the type of slate of speakers there are, maybe people are not as interested, or it could also be just the state of television in general, fewer people watching primetime television and getting their news in other ways. So that's something that I think the Republicans are also going to be very focused on, is getting their message out through multiple avenues, not just relying on television to get that, but streaming it, having the president tweet about it, having other people who have really built robust social media followings and personalities and interact with a lot of their hardcore base that way, making sure that it gets out through those avenues.
And so your headline tonight for the Washington Examiner, if you're writing the headline, Emily Larson, what is it?
So Joe Biden accepts nomination 33 years after he set out to become president.
Political reporter for the Washington Examiner joining us the last couple of nights. Thanks very much for being with us. I know you're heading to Charlotte to cover the convention. We appreciate your time here on C-SPAN.
Thank you.
In just a moment, Lavora Barnes. She is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, and former Republican Congressman Tom Davis, who headed up the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. But first, the official moment in which Joe Biden becomes the nominee.
The current president has cloaked American darkness for much too long. Too much anger, too much fear, too much division. Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. We'll choose hope over fear, facts over fiction, fairness over privilege. I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility I accept this nomination for president of the United States of America.
That from Wilmington, Delaware, Lavora Barnes, joining us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, former Congressman Tom Davis, Republican of Virginia. And Chairwoman Barnes, let me begin with you. How did Joe Biden do?
Joe Biden was amazing tonight. Joe Biden delivered a presidential address tonight, and he did so masterfully. He was intelligent and compassionate and strong and truly made the case for the Biden presidency. We heard clearly from him what it will be like when he is our president and what will be different about his presidency from the current one, and what he will do to rebuild this nation to the nation that we all hope for. I appreciate hope over fear. That's what I take away from tonight. He did a tremendous job. I'm very proud right now.
Tom Davis, I know on a personal level, you know Joe Biden, having served with him in the House when he was in the Senate. From your side of the aisle, how did he do?
Well, I think he did what he set out to do. He's been, I think, largely undefined. People kind of know who he is. He wants to come in as a unifier. He certainly unified the Democratic base. But this is still a very divided country. I like to say people don't tune into the news for information, they tune in for affirmation. And I think as you look at that speech, it's going to depend what lenses you look at life through. For some independents and Republicans, what he said was more of Obama administration, an administration that had two of the worst midterms since 1938 for Democrats. But he doesn't need to get Republican votes to win at this point. He's coming out with on average, about a 7-point lead coming out of this. What he needs to do is hold that Democratic coalition together, or the anti-Trump coalition, or whatever they've put together. And I think he was successful tonight in terms of hitting those kind of themes What you didn't play is he said, I accept the Democratic nomination, but I'm going to be president for everyone. And so I think that plays on where he needs to go on this. Now, this is just the opening ante. He gave a good speech. I think the Republicans were talking about this guy can't give a speech. He certainly did tonight. He's going to be more tested in the debates. He'll be more tested as we move on with questions from the media day to day and the grind and everything that goes with a campaign. But in terms of doing what he set out to do tonight, I think he accomplished his mission.
You brought up something the last couple of nights, Tom Davis. I want you to elaborate whether this is a personality-driven campaign or an issue-oriented campaign. Where are we now, and how do we get to one or the other?
Well, if you listen to the Democratic convention, it was both, but largely focused on Trump's personality, which I think are his weaker points. He seems to pull better on his job performance than he does on his personal numbers, and that's been true throughout his presidency. For Trump to win, he's got to make this an issue campaign. There are a number of issues, I think, where American people will agree with him versus the Democratic agenda, which I think has moved even more left than where it was with Hillary Clinton. But if this is a personality campaign, I think he's going to be in trouble. So they've got to move this to the issue set. The Democrats attacked him on both sides. I think Republicans will do the same to Biden at this point. But I think at the end of the day, for Trump to win, it's got to be on the issues.
And once again, the legacy of FDR and the New Deal woven into the speech tonight by the Democratic nominee, Joe Biden.
Now, nearly a century ago, Franklin Roosevelt pledged a New Deal in a time of massive unemployment, uncertainty, and fear. Stricken by a disease, stricken by a virus, FDR insisted that he would recover and prevail, and he believed America could as well. And he did, and we can as well.
That's from the speech tonight. But Lavora Barnes, if you hear from the Republicans, they say this is a socialist agenda. Is it?
It's America's agenda. This is a future president here talking to this country about where we need to go as a country to move out of this space that we're in now and into the future. He laid out very clearly, we've got four converging horrific things happening in this country right now that all could have been made better by a president and administration that actually stepped up and did the work they needed to do to support their citizens, all of their citizens, all of the citizens that a President Biden will represent. And you know, your previous guest said that she heard something of a State of the Union address here, and that's really true. I think at this moment, Joe Biden really did lay out the policy agenda that perhaps, you know, folks were looking to hear from him, and he did that very well, talked about issues. And I think that when we look at Donald Trump, it would be very hard for him to suddenly start talking about issues when he's been ignoring them for 4 years. We have to remember this man's been the president of the United States now and hasn't taken on any of the issues that he promised he would in 2016. And so he can't wake up tomorrow morning and tell the American public that he's ready to take on issues when he hasn't done so up until now. All he's done is make promises and break them over and over again. Joe Biden tonight made the case for, let's elect this president who actually understands what the issues are facing this country and knows how to tackle them and make a difference.
And Lavora Barnes, we heard a lot about George Floyd, including tonight where Joe Biden mentioned his name and his six-year-old daughter.
His daughter.
Why was that such an inflection point in America this year? His death.
I have to say, yeah, you know, look at me. We've been building toward this for a long time. The violence against Black and Brown Americans didn't just start with George Floyd. It's been going on for entirely too long. But this George Floyd moment was a convergence of all of us ready to say enough, right? Black Lives Matter, and you will listen to us this time, America, about this. And I'm so proud of my friends, my family, my children for stepping up and speaking up. It's the young people who have led this movement, and it's an important movement. The next step of which, frankly, is this election, which is this November election where these protests become votes. And I'm so proud that we've gotten here. I'm so proud that our president to be understands this issue, can speak to this issue with compassion and caring, and has chosen a vice presidential running mate who also understands this issue because she's lived it, because she looks like me, and because she looks like so many Americans. This is the team to meet this moment, and they will. And they'll take us forward here and help us fix so many of the problems in this country, including the racial disparities that we've been facing for years.
Tom Davis, your thought on this and George Floyd's death over Memorial just a couple of months ago and where we are today.
The George Floyd death was a tragedy, and I think almost all Americans united in saying this was the wrong thing to do. A couple points. Number one, this occurred in a city that has been governed by the Democrats for 100 years. In a Democratic state. It didn't have anything to do with national policy. The whole Black Lives Matter movement started with President Obama when he was there in Ferguson, Missouri, with the tragic death of Michael Brown. These are difficult issues, and I think sometimes when we take a look at this, we've seen identity politics been played maybe by both sides, trying to divide us where we ought to be coming together on these issues. In terms of Donald Trump and his campaign, he promised to redo the NAFTA. He redid the trade agreement, as he said, with Canada and Mexico. He's talked about building the wall. He's done more of that. It's the Democrats in Congress that have held that up. He's brought some new peace to the Middle East now with the United Arab Emirates coming in and recognizing Israel for the first time. We had, prior to this virus, the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years among African Americans, among Hispanics. He brought that until this virus came. I think a lot of people are saying, you know, as we come back from this, who is most likely to lead our economy back? Is it Donald Trump, who got unemployment down well below what a lot of Obama economists thought we could ever get it? Is he the guy to bring us back, or is it Joe Biden, who wants higher taxes and more regulation? So, look, there's a long way to go in this. And I said, we all look at life through different lenses on this. But let's give Joe Biden credit. He gave a kind of a unifying speech tonight. He hit the moment for him. This is you leave on a high note. He has done that, but it's the beginning of a long campaign, and we'll see how the Republicans do next week.
And, of course, coronavirus looming throughout this convention, the former vice president speaking about that tonight and offering his agenda if he's elected.
As president, the first step I will take we to get control of the virus that has ruined so many lives. Because I understand something this president hasn't from the beginning. We will never get our economy back on track. We will never get our kids safely back in schools. We'll never have our lives back until we deal with this virus. The tragedy of where we are today is it didn't have to be this bad. Just look around. It's not this bad in Canada or Europe, or Japan, or almost anywhere else in the world. And the president keeps telling us the virus is going to disappear. He keeps waiting for a miracle. Well, I have news for him. No miracle is coming.
So, Lavora Barnes, how do we deal with this? What specifically is the Biden agenda?
You know, 171 souls lost, and this current president said it is what it is. Part of the Biden agenda is the compassion for the families who have lost loved ones, compassion he understands because he's been through loss as well. He said very clearly to you tonight, you're going to wear a mask, right? Because that's part of how we get this thing under control. We're going to talk about whether or not we need to be sending our kids back into the classrooms right now, because we need to get this thing under control. It's so clear. Nothing gets fixed in this country right now until we get this virus under control. And we can't just ignore it. We can't just wish it away. We can't just hope that one day it'll get hot enough to burn off or that the disinfectant drink will make it go away. We have to fix this now. We have to follow science, and we have to be smart about this the way the governor here in Michigan has, the way so many governors across the country have, but the way this president has not. Frankly, any action from a president would be better, but Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in office are going to get this virus under control for us.
Congressman Davis, this has really been a lesson in states' rights and the role of the federal government, hasn't it?
Well, it really has, and you've got to ask yourself, do you want to put the same criteria for a rural county in Wyoming as you have in New York City? When you take a look at how individual governors have handled this, it's been some of the Democratic states. New York and New Jersey have some of the highest death rates and infection rates, you know, on a percentage basis. It's been a tragedy for all of the country. And I think one thing that Joe Biden does well, and I think, Laverne, you talked about it well, is he does emote on this. He feels the pain, and he's a comforter. Donald Trump doesn't quite have the same kind of persona on these issues, and that probably has not been to his benefit. But, you know, for all the crying about not having ventilators, they were able to get those in time. We are testing more people on a daily basis in the other country in the world. We are expediting vaccine research and testing to get that out quickly. I don't think any president here would not have had a lot of deaths, wouldn't have shut things down. As I look at a strategy of being saying people are going to have to hunker down and wear masks basically until we get some kind of vaccine, that's not a strategy either. There is a balance to come. But look, there have been shortcomings on the handling of this from the White House to the State House in different states. I'm not sure anybody did it wholly right because we've learned more about this. President Trump is the president, so he's going to get the criticism. But I haven't heard anything out of the Biden campaign that tells me that they would have handled it more successfully. All we know is what's happened to date has been a tragedy for the country, and the president will answer to that next week.
Lavora Barnes, this was a digital convention, and so I guess it was almost like an episode of Survivor, as we heard from Senator Cory Booker and those other 2020 wannabes who dropped out of the race, but reflecting on what it was like to be on the campaign trail with Joe Biden. Your thought about that moment?
That was fun to watch. They seemed to have a good time in their what looked like a Zoom call, talking about what it was like to be on the campaign trail with Vice President Biden. You know, they all had stories from whether it was serving together in the Senate or being on the campaign trail, stories of his compassion, stories of his caring. I think any of us who have met Joe Biden have a story like that, because that's who Joe Biden is. And it's just another piece of the story of who this man is and how important it is for Americans to understand and get to know him. And the way we do this now is through this virtual world. I also want to say I love the granddaughters on the couch sort of crowded together the way my kids crowd together on the couch, talking about the grandfather, talking about his ice cream. Really got lots of good looks at what it's like to be part of the Joe Biden family. I thought that was a beautiful piece of tonight's coverage as well. They did a good job with that.
And debating whether it was vanilla or chocolate ice cream, or maybe it was Breyer's ice cream that's both chocolate
Breyer's.
And vanilla. Tom Davis, you've seen all four nights of this convention, and again, you mentioned on day one that you were back in Miami in 1972, balloon drops and the silly hats. Tonight, we didn't have any of that. We did have some fireworks. How do you think it played out?
Well, clearly it didn't play out the same. I mean, you take a look at attendance was down in terms of people tuning in and watching it, and I think the Republicans will have the same problem. So I think you lose some of the excitement and the pizzazz that goes with that, that kind of gives you a boost. It's a difficult situation to be doing any of this kind of thing. And so I looked at the Rasmussen tracking polls, and Trump has actually moved up 3 or 4 points this week during all of this. Maybe it's because he's not saying anything and you have the Democrats talking at this point. But for whatever reason, you're not going to get the same residents that you've had in previous conventions. And these basically are information, they're basically advertisements at this point. They're messaging for the major parties. The nomination was determined months ago. And so they get 2 hours a night, and it's how do you message this? And in this environment, without the excitement and the pizzazz and the cheering crowds, it's a lot more difficult. I think the Democrats did a good job given what they had. And again, I think the vice president tonight, in terms of his speech, touched the right tones that he had to touch going into the campaign. But this starts a campaign now. There will be a back and forth. People will start paying more attention. They will start pursing his words as well as President Trump's words at this point. I think it's going to be an interesting race. I suspect it will tighten some simply because this is a very, very closely divided country. And from the Biden perspective, he wants to get enough disgruntled independents, and he seems to be winning among independents today, but at the same time hold his base. And that liberal base is far more liberal than the average independent. How do you hold this together through the campaign, and then how do you govern afterwards? As I said, the Republicans went through the Tea Party stage. Democrats are now going through what I call the Herbal Tea Party, where they have a left wing that they're going to have to try to hold in check to govern and hold it through the election. But I think as you look at this convention, they've done a good job of managing that.
There's another moment from the speech tonight. I want to get both of your reaction. But Tom Davis, you brought up polling. There was a poll out today from the Morning Call newspaper that had Joe Biden up by 4 percentage points, which is a drop for the Biden campaign. There's also a headline, Lavora Barnes, from the Detroit News that says that for Michigan Democrats, the election mantra is ignoring the polls because there are numbers that have Joe Biden up double digits in Michigan. So as you see that headline, what are you sensing on the ground, and what can we expect on Election Day?
You know, we're a long way from Election Day. There's a lot of work still to be done. This is the beginning of a long slog for all of us who are working on these elections. And I've been saying to everyone here in Michigan, every time I get the chance, to ignore these polls. The only poll that matters to us is the one that the voters participate in that wraps up on Election Day. So we're going to continue to work hard, talking to our voters, helping them walk through the process of getting an absentee ballot and voting it and getting it back to their clerks, to make sure that their votes are counted and get into the clerk's office on time here in Michigan and all over this country. This is what the Democrats are set up to do. We've got large organizations on the ground all over the country ready to do this work, and we're just going to keep working on it. You know, the polls that we saw in 2016 told us a story that turned out not to be true. So we can't rest on our laurels. We can't sit back and say, oh, look, we're up. We need to stay up. We need to run like we're behind, and that's what we're doing. We're running a campaign like we are losing, so that we have the best chance of not just winning, but really truly running up the numbers in November. We want to win big. We don't just want to win. We want to win big.
So as the chair of the party on November 3rd, what city, what part of the state will you be looking at that says this is going to be a good night or a bad night for us?
So, you know, we're running an 83 counties here in Michigan. We're running an 83 county strategy. One of the mistakes I think any state can do is to concentrate entirely too much of their time and energy on one part of the state because they believe that's the place where they can get the turnout. But for me, I'm going to pay attention to what's happening in Detroit and Wayne County. I'm going to be looking at Oakland County because that's a county where we have, as Democrats, made great strides picking up the county commission there. We now have the chief executive in that county, and we have a couple of seats there where we have picked up the congressional seats and want to hold those, so Oakland County becomes important. And then on the west side of the state, we're going to keep an eye on Kent County, which is another place where we've made great strides here in Michigan, growing our base there, picking up seats, and we've got a congressional seat we think we might be able to pick up over there. So those are the places I'll be paying attention to, but I will be watching the numbers from all over the state, hoping that we can actually turn every county in Michigan blue come November.
And Tom Davis, you know the Commonwealth of Virginia probably better than anyone. It's a swing state now, so when the returns come in on Election Day, what will you be looking for?
Well, it's probably going to be a Biden state because of the growth up in my area, in the Northern Virginia area. This area is it's full, chock full of federal employees. It's a very affluent area. It's very multi-ethnic. These are areas that returned me to office. I won 11 elections there, never had a close election. But as I said, as the party base has shifted from the country club to the country, you pick up West Virginia, you pick up parts of Michigan in the rural areas, but you're losing in the Oakland counties and the Fairfaxes and Arlingtons and Alexandria. In fact, they're getting crushed there. The early returns from Virginia generally are more Republican, but Fairfax and Prince William counties come in late. And they have been, I think Trump got 29% in Fairfax last time. It's 15% of the state vote. So that's going to be tough. Laverne, let me just say you're a wise party chairman. You take nothing for granted. You're smart to just run straight through the tape. My understanding is Michigan's probably going to be the toughest of the states that Trump carried last time to hold. So maybe the first to crack. But there was a poll out today in Minnesota, a credible poll that showed Trump tied there in Minnesota, which was a close race there 4 years ago, but Clinton carried it. So you take nothing for granted. Campaigns matter, and I think more than ever this year, campaigns matter. President Trump's last time showed he can be a very, very tough campaigner, and unlike the last election, he's going to have a lot of money to spend. Last time he ran his race on a shoestring, but he ran it with a message. Hillary Clinton had a lot of money. But this time, I think both sides will have money. But this convention season is just the start of the campaign, and it's how the candidates perform after this. But and let me just say one other thing. I felt bad for Kamala Harris last night not having that crowd with her, because you could feel out in the heartland the enthusiasm of a lot of people as they see her up there, the first African-American, Pacific Asian woman with a nomination for vice president. But you couldn't get the electricity from the speech that she was giving there. And I think it kind of fell flat. I'm not criticizing the speech. I'm just saying not having that background and the balloons and the cheering crowds and everything, you almost feel, I'm a Republican, but you almost feel bad for her, that she kind of deserved better at this point.
One more moment from the speech tonight by the now 2020 Democratic nominee, Joe Biden, on where we're at and where we're going.
History says, don't hope on this side of the grave. But then, once in a lifetime, the longed-for tidal wave of justice can rise up and hope and history rhyme. This is our moment to make hope and history rhyme. With passion and purpose, let us begin, you and I together, one nation, under God, united in our love for America, united in our love for each other. For love is more powerful than hate. Hope is more powerful than fear. And light is more powerful than dark. This is our moment. This is our mission.
Lavora Barnes, were there echoes of the Hope and Change campaign of Barack Obama in that speech tonight?
Absolutely. I think we all sort of recognize that, and we're so pleased to hear it. I also loved the moment where Vice President Biden thanked President Obama, because I think all of us spend a lot of time saying thank you, Obama, for all that he did for us. He really shows how to be a good president, how to be a president that the world and the country looks up to, a president that your children can look up to. And Joe Biden will be that kind of president again, and Kamala Harris will be just that kind of vice president. It's the moment, you know, Joe Biden stepped up to the moment tonight in a beautiful and strong, powerful way. And I'm looking forward to hearing more from him over and over again, and him with Kamala Harris at his side. Also, I think about that moment at the end. I don't know how long folks were watching, but if you watch them go outside and stand in front of the big flag for the fireworks, and that moment with the arms raised, with them masked, I think will be the image of 2020, this memory of having to run this campaign in the era of COVID, masked and socially distanced and virtual. Very different, but very powerful imagery there.
And I have to tell you, if you watch C-SPAN, of course, you saw it, because we carried the conventions in their entirety, gavel to gavel. So we appreciate the plug for that, Lavora Barnes. Tom Davis, on this final night of the Democratic Convention, your final thoughts?
Well, this is the start of what's going to be a very tough political season, a lot of money on both sides. There'll be a lot of negativity. I do think, Lavoie, I agree with her. I think people like optimists. Voters like optimists. They don't like just the slashing and bashing. And I think one of the problems Hillary Clinton had last time is she was almost too negative this year coming out there, and both candidates were negative. Ronald Reagan was an optimist. That got him through some very, very tough times. Barack Obama talked as an optimist. Voters like that, and I think that Biden hit the right tone like that. Now, whether you maintain it through the campaign is a different issue. Campaigns are all about discipline, and we have both candidates have shown an ability to go off script on occasion. But it's going to be an exciting race for those of us that are political junkies and look forward to, and I think it's going to tighten, and Lavoie, you got to keep your people working, going door to door down, because you saw what happened 4 years ago. It's going to be tight, and you take nothing for granted.
We would love to check in with you often during this campaign. Former Congressman Tom Davis, Republican of Virginia, here in Washington. Lavora Barnes joining us from Ann Arbor, Michigan. She is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. The hour is late, but we appreciate you being with us here on C-SPAN. Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Thanks.
Have a good night. Bye. Morning.
And a reminder, we're live with the Republican Convention next week, and all of our coverage available on our website at cspan.org.